Fred, it's Arch here. I do hope this voice note finds you well. Just dropping this as I'm on the way home from the hospital to go and pick up a few bits and bobs. I'm not sure if you're aware, but little Johnny Jono Haskell Abendanon Curzon was born a few days ago. So it's all been go, go, go. Yeah, just popping back actually to go and get a couple of weights and a kettlebell. I'm going to try and do a cheeky little hit session in the ward tonight. Look, I won't be able to make the podcast, unfortunately. So it might be worth giving the listeners a bit of a heads up that there won't be any banter. Although I will be back next week to deliver some C.H.A.T. chat. But pretty knackered. Haven't really slept, mate. Thank God the nanny's here, but annoyingly she can't breastfeed, which I didn't really know was the deal. I thought girls could just naturally do that, but apparently you have to be pregnant or being pregnant to breastfeed. I'm learning all the time, mate. I'm learning all the time. But yeah, it is amazing. You'll have to come and have a look at England's future number 10, but I'm having to do quite a lot with the bottle. But don't worry, little Johnny Jono Haskell Abendanon Curzon hasn't done a buffalo yet, and I hope that will be the case for many years to come. Nice to stretch my legs, but heading back to the hostel in a bit. Haven't really slept, not eating well, so the rig's getting a bit wobbly, which is, it's a bit worrying, but I think once we get home and get into a little bit of a routine, I should be back to the full swing of things. You know, work offered me 2 weeks off, and I just said, look, I probably just need a couple of days. I'll be back to work because, you know, I don't want to miss out on making coin. Anyway, mate, I've probably waffled on a long time. I have tried to call you about, six times. So I don't know where you're at. I tell you what, though, I am looking forward to posting on Instagram because apparently babies get loads of action. So, yeah, give me some bloody good contact. And I'll keep you posted if little Johnny Jono has any banter. Hasn't said any words yet, but I'm sure that will come in the coming days. All right, mate, take it easy. Have a good one. Do call me when you get this. Like, please, give me a shout. More life!
A bloody free. Have I told you I've got a high basic salary? Making money, now that's the key.
Cloners, it's Arch again. Just tried to call you. Give me a call back. I'm just in the hospital. I'm pretty bored, if I'm being honest. Didn't realise babies don't do much. Not even giving me any chat so far. But anyway, maybe come down. Come down to the hospital if you want. I've got a couple of beers here. And a funny story, one of the doctors in the ward I played rugby against, and I was trying to get him to have a beer, but he's working tonight. But let me know.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 101 of the Rugbiz podcast. My name is Freddie Claude, and I think for only the second time in 101 episodes, I'm not sat next to Mr. Archer Curzon. It feels absolutely incredible. Finally, some respite away from that devilish man himself. But of course, big news, as you would have just heard there, I woke up to it this morning. He's had his baby, Johnny Jono Curzon Abendon, or whatever ridiculous name he called it, poor thing. You know, we'll pray for its future. Obviously, Mr. AC Limit's not alongside me, but we do luckily have an interview in store, and it's with ex-Australian captain, Mr. James Horwill. Ex-Australian captain, ex-Harlequins captain. So without further ado, let's just get stuck in to a bit of banter with a legend of Australian rugby.
Horsey, you there, mate?
Yeah, I'm here, guys. How are we?
Yeah, mate, very, very well. How are you?
Good. Thanks, boys.
It's great to finally get you on here.
Mate, it's good to be on here. Thanks for inviting me. I feel very privileged.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have on the show the legendary ex-Wallabies and Quins captain, James Horwill. James, firstly, sir, before we really get dug in, how come you've moved recently back to Australia? And, you know, how's the life over there?
I moved back sort of midway through last year, sort of middle of COVID. My wife had our second daughter just before we moved, or just after we moved back. So that was probably the main reason, to be a bit closer to the family and missing the UK a bit. But it's nice to be home.
What's the banter like in Brisbane? Is that sort of like the sort of the Clapham of Australia, or I don't know, or the Putney of Australia? I don't know us that well.
Probably a bit more like Putney. I know. Because, mate, I hate to break it to you, I used to live in Putney when I was in London.
Well, Aussie, and I had such high hopes. You know, you played for Quinns. I thought that guy has definitely got chat. You know, he's a high net worth individual. How? Oh my God!
Well,
are you okay?
Yeah, I'm
no
sorry.
Wonder you left
England. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, boys. I had to break it to you early. I knew you'd be upset, Archie, mate. So I just had to get that out there early, just in case you didn't want to continue with the pod.
No, he's a big name. He's okay. A big name. Okay. I'll forgive him. But I mean, it's probably a good time now to name and shame. Is there anyone else we should be aware of that lives in that area that we should try and avoid at all costs?
So Will Collier used to live up the road from me. Mark Lambert, also at Quinns. I think he's still in Putney.
Yeah, these are both props, so their chat would be pretty limited anyway.
The Putney props, so that was about it, really. That was about the three of us that were based in there.
I always had the dream, you know, that you, me, Jamie Roberts and Tim Vista would start a property company and we'd just be called like the three C's and we'd just go around just absolutely taking people down in the Ned. You know, people would be like, there's an ex-Australian captain, there's a Wales legend, and there's this guy who's Dutch but plays for Scotland, and then there's the CEO of Clapham. These guys are great on the lash. They know their property. And we'd just be chucking residential properties left, right, and centre around Clapham, making a lot of coin.
Mate, you're excited, man. I think we should do this. I think maybe I come back to the UK. I reckon we get this going. This would be in. Jamie, I'm sure it'd be in.
Yeah,
With four of us, we can get it done.
Write that down, because I'm going to write a business proposal. Okay. And I'll message everyone on LinkedIn because I'm connected with
Okay, I'll write that. Yeah. James, how did you know, being an Aussie legend, obviously you moved over to London after your career in Brisbane, but how did you first find out about the podcast and a certain genius in Mr. Archie Curzon, if you want to call him that, for lack of a better word?
I think it was Jack Clifford, Jackman, put me on to
Jackman.
Because he always used to frequent Infernos. I think it was your original boys YouTube video that I saw at some point. Someone showed me and said, this is what private school or public school boys are like in the UK.
Yeah.
Playing for the Clapham Falcons. So that's where I was first introduced, some of your old work. And then, mate, look at you now.
Yeah, I'm just maturing like a red wine. It's just getting better and better. And people just, you know, people message me, say like, mate, have you got any other chat? And I'm like, well, does Cristiano Ronaldo play any other way? No, don't think so.
Well, talking about, you know, public school boys in England, you obviously attended Brisbane College. What are your memories of schoolboy rugby? Obviously, you were probably first 15 captain there because you wanted to lead your country. How loose did things get in Brisbane College when you're 18? You're the talk of the town. You're walking around Brisbane.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit funny. School finishes a year earlier here. So we sort of play first 15 when you're like 16, 17. So we finish school when we're 17 in Queensland. So you sort of have to do a bit of underground lashing, sort of house party action. You can't really go out and do too much. It's sort of house party whose parents are away for the weekend and end up there. So that was sort of schoolboy rugby, you know, post game stuff. But it was, yeah, it's a bit different to the UK where you can't actually legally go out and enjoy yourself.
Were you quite a big dog at school, Horsey? Were you sort of, you know, you had a big chassis out there, all the birds loving you. You go up to the board and be like, oh yeah, I'm in the first again. Oh dear. Here we go. 10,000 people coming to watch me. By the way, I'm going to Birdie's house tonight. His parents are away. Let's play Spin the Bottle and you can have a little ride on the old Horsey chassis.
Mate, that's essentially how it actually played out. I can't actually add anything to that. That's that's essentially my childhood right there, my senior years at high school.
I feel like I know you. I feel like we had a very similar, that was how I operated at school. Go through the quad and all the girls would be coming down. I'd be standing by the board and they'd be like, hey, what are you doing? I'd be like, just looking at my name in the first 15. And then
you weren't in the first.
Yeah, I was. And I'd be right next to it. And then they'd be like, there's Nick and Bender. And I'd be like, yeah, me and Bender's together. And they was like, what are you guys doing later? And they'd be like, we'll be in the tuck shop. I said, I'll see you there.
Well, do you tap into the old boy Cheltenham network? I mean, surely that's the easiest place to do business in the world, isn't it, sir?
Yeah, big time. I mean, I'm pretty much connected on LinkedIn with every old boy that's gone to Cheltenham College.
Wow.
Yeah, so I know the movers and shakers. Yeah, that's very, very important.
Did you do sort of a lot of business with them?
Yeah, a lot of business, a lot of lashing. You know, if I see an opportunity, I mean, for instance, currently, you know, I was actually doing a business with a guy who was my dorm captain called Gleb Koshalev.
Oh, okay.
But he's now somehow disappeared online.
Yeah, so I wonder what's happened to Russia, Everton, was he?
Yeah, was. Yeah, yeah. I think he was. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. He once played rugby in my house pots, and he broke his leg and continued to play.
Oh God.
So yeah, unfortunately, Gleb, if you're listening, hope you're right, mate. Anyway, carry on.
James, you obviously started out your career playing for Queensland, but under Eddie Jones, if I'm not mistaken. We've had some guests on this podcast who've talked about how completely crazy he is, weird things he does when he interacts with people. What are your sort of weirdest and craziest memories of seeing him just like lose it or be weird?
I've never seen grown men be so scared of another man as I have seen of, you know, adult rugby players of Eddie Jones. I mean, I think he's chilled out a lot now, but he used to be very, very scary man. He used to give some of the world-class dressing downs I've ever seen. And I mean, we lost a game once and we were in the change room for at least 45 minutes. It made us all sit on the floor and just gave us a full dressing down for about 30, 45 minutes, individually pointing people out. Just, it was impressive.
Well, James, after five incredible years, you managed to become not only one of the most, you know, incredible players for the team, but also captain. And in 2011, the first year of the revamped Super Rugby Championship, you led your side to victory. I mean, what an incredible day that was in front of a massive home crowd in Brisbane. What are your memories of that day? And also, apparently, there was a massive parade. Things got loose. You got the keys to the city. Like, just give an insight into how do you celebrate such a mammoth achievement?
Look, it was good. It was good fun. Unfortunately, so because of the rugby schedule, we won on the Saturday, and then we had to go into Wallaby Camp on the Monday morning. So we sort of, you know, there was a fair few of us that went a few days into catching on a bus. I won't name names, but there's a few boys sort of vomiting on a team bus on the way to the airport to go to Wallaby Camp because they were still inebriated. And then we had to go and then unfortunately the next weekend was the weekend that we lost to Samoa in Sydney with a number of our guys playing that were probably still hungover from the weekend before.
Who is the loosest person you played with just when you were playing for Brisbane? Who was like loosey goosey on a night out?
Loosest player I've ever played with. He's not he played over in Ireland for a bit. A guy called Ed O'Donoghue. So he's not a big name at all, but his stamina on a night out was just, it just keep going. And he was just, I mean, good value, not an aggressive way, but good value, but just the loosest.
What about sort of Quade Cooper, Will Genya? At that time, playing for Brisbane, the hottest property in Australian rugby, surely those guys partied all night long with the ladies.
I'm not going to comment for them, but yeah, they didn't. Particularly Quade didn't do too bad. I mean, I don't think he does too bad now either.
Yeah, well, I think when you're fly half, you know, and I can speak on behalf of Quade.
Yeah.
We don't know each other, but I feel like we do. You know, we do. You can't help but get attention. You know, I'm in Archer Street Wine Bar down Northcote Road. I'm getting attention. Like the girls are going to come up. I've got the hair. I've got the body. I've got the V-neck T-shirt. It's very hard for them not to come to me.
Yeah.
And if they don't, I just simply wolf whistle, and they will. You know, they'll turn around, and I'll beckon them over, put my hand around them, and just say, "I'm 10. I play semi-pro rugby." James Hallwell follows me on Instagram. Boom.
They're back.
They're back in my flat. And I'm talking to them, I'm showing them all my videos on Instagram, and then bam, they've got to leave because we spent 2 hours watching all those videos.
Well, you know, obviously talking about Will Genya and the like, you made your Australian debut against Fiji in 2007. Later that year, of course, it was the World Cup in Paris. You didn't make the squad. How pissed off were you to not make that squad, having done such an incredible performance for the international side for the whole of that year?
Yeah, I was pretty dirty. They only took 3 locks. They didn't take 4 locks. So I was the one left out. And look, I was dirty. It wasn't fun. But in hindsight, I ended up meeting my wife on a night out when I was, you know, drowning my sorrows for not making the World Cup squad. So every cloud has a silver lining, as they say. So I don't know whether that would have happened if I had to go into the World Cup. So you got to look at the positives in life, boys.
Yeah, I mean that actually makes you think. You know, if I don't go on to get selected for any of the international teams I've submitted my application for, maybe this is next year. The World Cup was the year I meet Mrs. Cousin, the future Mrs. Cousin.
I don't know, hopefully. Well,
I mean, good.
There's so many of them out there. Surely someone's up for it.
Well, James, back to your career, because 4 years after having missed out on the World Cup, you're leading the country suddenly. I mean, what a 4 years again. But before that, you lead in your first match, I believe, to win the Tri Nations. What was that like, leading out the Aussies to win such an incredible tournament, especially back then? Now it's kind of, what are your thoughts on the, you know, the sort of...
Love it. I love it. Yeah, yeah. I watch all rugby, Super Rugby.
Do you not think it's got worse since they let in the Argentinians and?
No. I love it. I love Southern Hemisphere rugby.
You love Queensland
rugby.
That's
where I wish I was born in Australia. I'd be walking into that team now.
You never, mate. Yeah, we do need some fly halves, so you never know.
If only. Unfortunately, I don't have it. I've submitted.
You got no heritage.
Probably somewhere down the line. I think I have. I used to have a great uncle Donald who lived in just outside Sydney, who I met once, and he had a lot of land.
Okay.
But I think he got arrested for some disturbing behaviour, and then we never. He's not talked about in my family, so I don't know. Don't know.
But what are your memories of that? You know, leading your team in that first Tri Nations, and then on to the World Cup, where you guys made the semi final.
Yeah, winning. I guess because we did it here in Brisbane, so that was a bit of fun. Because obviously, being sort of Brisbane born and bred, being able to play in your home stadium was a big thrill for us. So yeah, look, it was awesome. We were a bit disappointed we didn't get on further in the World Cup. I think we would have liked to have. We lost to Ireland in the pool stages, so put us on the wrong side of the draw, unfortunately. So I had to go through South Africa and New Zealand to make the final. And I think we spent all our energy on the quarterfinal to beat South Africa, and we just couldn't get it done over New Zealand. But you always wish, sort of think back, and if we hadn't been on the other side of the draw, we might have met the Kiwis in the final, which would have been a bit of fun.
Horsey, I mean, just tell us, what's it take to be an international captain? I mean, look, you want to be a team, but obviously there are individuals, like any team in rugby. You know, you look at me at the Clapham Falcons or Marcus Smith at Harlequins, how they manage those people. But it was that particularly hard. You're like James O'Connors, your Quaid Coopers, your Will Genyers, all those kind of guys that I guess are superstars of the game.
It had its moments. There was obviously some well-publicised bits that sort of happened along the way. I think everyone's just got to be themselves as long as they understand that the team is the ultimate goal, and that's the most important thing. Everything else, I think you sort of used to get stressed out with, you know, everyone having to be the same, but it's important that people be themselves. And as long as the focus is on the team and they're doing things to perform on the team, whatever people do around the edges is their business, and whatever they can do to prepare the best to play, that's all that I really cared about.
Well, you're obviously a natural leader, but you know, how hard was it, and also being serious for a second again, to be involved with the likes of Israel Folau? I mean, after his comments, before sort of retiring from international rugby yourself and also him, like, what was he like to deal with day to day? Did you see these problems coming to a halt, or, you know, was it sort of quite well kept undercover?
You know, my time with Izzy was always, as a rugby player, he's an amazing footballer and one of the most talented athletes I think I've probably ever played with, the stuff you could see him do from an athletic standpoint. But I think, look, Izzy, you know, even though he's been publicised, he very much kept to himself. He was not he never boisterous or outgoing. He was sort of, he did what he wanted to do and then was always part of the team and never did anything wrong from that side. So when I played with him, I never had any issues. But obviously, since then, there's been some things that he's said and that's, he's entitled to those opinions. So look, I think it's, from my side, I don't, my experience when I was playing with him for a couple of years, I had never had any problems with what he did, and he was always a very good teammate.
I think when you put yourself out there, as you know, like I can also relate to, you know, I'm an outspoken Instagram superstar, you know, with some pretty brash rules on how to conduct the business world. Some people on, you know, LinkedIn disagree. I mean, I tend to fuck off back to Putney, but you are going to get those consequences. People are going to come against you in the business world. You know, one of my biggest competitors in the city, you know, he's always trying to take me down, but that's the price you pay.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How's everybody doing tonight? All right. Well, I'd like to welcome to the stage the financially acclaimed. Well, I like this young man because when he came out with a phrase, love and champagne. I like that. All right. So everybody in the house, give a warm round of applause for Mr. Archie C, the magician, ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for him, y'all. And she asked, he's never been as rich as me. I lied that when I was younger, I had the church for free. Houses, the Kensington flat all day, or the house in Chelsea, or reside in North Devon. Shout out to Salcombe Bay and put a name tag in my shirt and in my gaiters. I'm off to boarding school, so I guess I'll see you later. Asked me to play hockey, damn, that's a great mistake. Ah, so I punch him in his face. Stay in your place, play your position. Here comes my intuition when I play some rugby. Impress the chicas, all were hungry, that's hockey glocking. Here comes respect, his crew, your crew, or they might be next. Well, little bitches played footsie, I was investing in the footsie. Come on back, baby, tell the rest of this history, meet loyalty. Even hockey boys bought me lunch, the chicken was delicious, the spinach with a bit of crunch, boiled eggs to finish, and yes, I like to dunk.
Sky is the limit, and you know that you give on, just keep on pressing on. Sky is the limit, and you know that you can have what you want.
Anyway, James, so a couple of years later, you led your team against the Lions, still captain. Forgetting the result for a second, was that sort of the most incredible experience playing against the Lions team? How important was that, like, to Rugger in general?
I mean, it was awesome for rugby down here. As you guys mentioned before, we're probably a fair way down the pecking order in terms of national sports. You know, we're behind AFL, rugby league, and obviously then you've got cricket and a couple other sports. So to have rugby sort of as front and center as a sport for that period of time, for the 6 weeks it was on, was awesome. And, you know, fair play to the Lions fans. You know, they certainly know how to support their team. Wearing the same kit every day for 6 weeks is pretty impressive. I don't know how many of them washed, but, you know, I don't think some of them ever took that Lions shirt off. If they weren't wearing their current Lions shirt, they had a red shirt on. So, I mean, there was just red everywhere in every city. And I thought it was, yeah, from a rugby point of view, from a like a rugby in Australia point of view, it was awesome. Obviously, the results sucked. And the third test, we were just awful. We just didn't play, fire a shot, and they were very good. But other than that, I mean, it was a good experience, except for probably one game.
In that first test, you got into a bit of trouble because you were cited by the IRB for stamping on Alan Jones, a ban we should say you got overturned. But now you retire. Yeah, twice. but when you look back on that moment, do you think you're a bit lucky to get it overturned?
No, I don't. I can look at your boy straight in the eye and say, I didn't mean to stand on his face or head. I think it's quite obvious that I did stand on his head, but I didn't mean to. And at the time, I had no idea. I mean, literally, I had no idea until I got a phone call. I got a phone call from our team manager at like 6 a.m. or 6:30 a.m. the next morning, saying, "Hey, you've been cited. We got to go through this legal process to get it done." And my original response was, when did it happen? I literally had no clue until obviously I saw it and then watched it about 1,000 times over the next 2 weeks. And yeah, it was unfortunate. It was a bit of a sideshow, but it seems that every Lions series there's always one incident, whether you got the Umunga incident in the Kiwi series, you know, the Burger eye gouge in what, 2009. So yeah. You know, it just happened to be me.
And I can vouch, you know, a lot of people don't mean to stamp on players. Like, pretty much every game I play, at least three people stamp on me. And, you know, and I know that they generally don't mean to.
All accidental.
And a lot of them are my own teammates. A lot of mine are my own teammates. They generally said they didn't even see me there. But luckily, you know, my body is
a show of affection, mate.
Yeah, it is.
You should take it.
I'll be on the peripherals of the ruck, and then, you know, I'll try and counter ruck as I'm built that way. I'm quite fortunate. And then I'll end up on the ground, and then our flanker, who's quite a moody guy, and I think he just doesn't get my chat, because I keep saying, because he went to state school, and he just, you know, I call him the poor guy in the corner, and he keeps stamping on me, and then he says it again, didn't mean it. And to be fair, it's happened a few times, and I think it is an affection.
Well, a couple of years later, Checker, once again, I mean, you've captained your country to a World Cup semi-final, Tri-Nations victory, but you've been left out of two World Cups controversially. 2015, Checker leaves you out.
Not a nice thing to do is bring that up.
No, I'm sorry, especially for the back of the lines. But was that the hardest moment of your professional career? Because you were already proving yourself with over 60 caps at that point. How did you find out? How did Checker break the news to you? And do you think it was the wrong call?
I would have liked to go. I thought I played well enough to go. But in the end, I can't really argue. They made it to a World Cup final with the squad he took. So, look, I would have loved to have gone, but, you know, shit happens, unfortunately. And, yeah, look, disappointed. told me sort of the night before, which was a little bit disappointing, but, you know, there was a flight out the next morning and just got basically told you're not going. So, but look, that's life and you move on. But I would have liked to, as I said, I would have liked to have played. It would have been a nice sort of, I'd signed for Quinns already at that point. So it was sort of going to hopefully be a nice sort of finale to my career in Australia, hopefully winning a World Cup, but wasn't to be. But yeah, look, it's part of it. You know, I'm the guy that missed out on two World Cups.
Yeah, but Halsey, you're a great guy. You've got a multi-million pound property portfolio. I think, you know, don't worry about those.
Yeah, exactly.
At the end of the day, money makes you happy. And, you know, it's one thing my dad said to me, and, you know, you can never have enough of it.
No.
That's the beauty of money.
Well, we're talking about the multi-million pound property empire in Brisbane. How did that come about? Was that just like old family property businesses, or was it hard work? Was it hard graft? Was you being genius? Obviously, no wonder Archie wants to set up a property company with you. You're a genius.
I don't know if I'm a genius. I've got a few properties, but I wouldn't say I'm a genius. Oh, look, it was just something that I've enjoyed doing, and, you know, lucky enough to, as we went along, playing and just moved into different places as we went away. But yeah, I'm disappointed I didn't buy a property in the UK, although it would have been in Putney probably, Archie. Ooh. I'm sorry, mate.
There's not too late. We can go into one in Clapham. It's you'll probably be aware. Clapham
six
is,
bed.
Six bed. Yeah. I mean, we could make something very sort of luxury.
Well, Archie, I don't want to jump on here, but James, Archie's mid-30s and has been renting for 14 years in Clapham. So as a man who owns a multi-million pound property empire, can you give him a bit of advice get on the ladder? Because you talk a big game, but...
No, look, I was going to buy a property about 3 years ago, but the problem was it was either get a property... But I wasn't sure where I wanted to live in Clapham because it's all so wonderful. Or buy a watch. And so I bought a watch. I thought it was a better investment.
Well, just quickly better to Checker, because I remember when we had Tom May on this podcast, he was talking about Checker being like the craziest coach he's ever worked under. Apparently he used to get involved in training, broke his arm in one training session. Like, was he the same for Australia? Was he like the craziest person you've ever worked with?
Yeah, I mean, I did work with Eddie at peak. True. Sort of crazy Eddie. So, I mean, I don't know if he was
as physical.
Check was pretty cool. No, he wasn't. Yeah, Czech used to get involved. He used to do a bit of old school. He used to like running, like doing some old ridiculous like fitness sessions, sort of up at 5 a.m. and making you sort of, you know, do, what do we do? Like take a shot of whiskey and then sprint up the stairs and that sort of stuff. Like really old school.
Nice.
Like sort of, yeah. And he used to do it, to fair play to him. Like whatever we had to do, he was there doing it, even though it wasn't as fast. He used to just get through it. So... I mean, he was, again, gives a fantastic dressing down to someone if you do something wrong. I've had some great ones from him over my short time. But, yeah, he used to think really – he'd probably think more outside the box than Eddie did. You know, he used to bring golf clubs in and do all these sort of different motivational tools to just get people focused on the job.
Sounds crazy.
I had a head of sweat at boarding school who did a similar thing with and I think that's where my hatred for hockey comes from, because he used to get us up in the morning at 6 a.m. in our yard, in our boarding house, and then hit hockey balls at us as motivation.
Motivate you to do
and,
what?
And if you got hit and didn't cry, then you could go back inside. And it was really motivating, because it taught me to put all my emotions down and not to cry, let them out. And I think... if there's one message to the younger listeners listening to this is, you know, like, just if you do feel the urge to cry, you're having a bit of a shit one, just put it down.
Just bottle it up.
Yeah, bottle it up and put it down. No one wants to hear your problems. And that's what I've learned. And that's probably why I would have developed quite well under Eddie Jones and Michael Checker. You know, I wouldn't have cried.
Very
I would
similar
have
school.
Swallowed it, put it down there. Probably gone to the cubicle in the loos, banged my head a few times, bit my finger, and then come back out. I'd be right as rain. Still works to this day.
Well, quickly, James, because then you moved to London, you moved to Quinns, where you ended up being a captain, which is an incredible achievement. Was the reason you left because you just couldn't put up with how boring Jamie Roberts and Chris Robshaw were?
Well, they'd already left Quinns by the time. Jamie had already left. He'd already gone to Bath, but... Yeah, I just finished up. I love my time at Quinns. Even living in Putney, mate. Sorry, Archie. Partly is great. It's not Clapham, but it's close.
Well, James, post Quinns, you go on to study a master's at Cambridge, which is an incredible achievement, following in Jamie's footsteps, embarrassingly. But what was it like being back at uni in your mid-30s? Because that is a dream.
That would be my dream. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a little bit weird in a good way. I mean, being at uni, and I was obviously married. I had a one-year-old daughter at the time. We were a good bunch of lads that we played with for Cambridge, and we got to beat Oxford, so that's the most important thing.
What did the boys treat you like? Because obviously you're a big name in the rugby world, and we know what rugby noises are like around sort of rugby players. Was it a bit awkward at the beginning? Were they quite naughty? Were they like, mate, what's Ugo Monye like? What's, you know, Danny Kerr like?
What's Archie Gazin like?
I think, they did ask about you, actually, which is funny. But I don't know, maybe they already knew that we sort of knew each other on Instagram.
I think, you know, wherever you go, you'll probably get asked about me. It is, you know, it's the cross you bear now. It's the cross you bear.
You're an influencer, mate. That's why.
Influencing people.
Globally. I mean, look, there was a fair few rugby noises, but I don't think, not in a bad way. I think it was a little bit awkward to begin with. You sort of try and pretend that you're, you know, act like you're a student. But then there were those sort of questions. We had some interesting tour to Dublin, which was a bit of fun. Yeah, it was good fun, but there's some good boys there, but there were certainly a few rugby noises at the time as well.
David Pocock.
No chat.
Adam Ashley Cooper.
Chat.
Drew Mitchell.
Chat.
Matt Gitto.
Chat.
Carl Sinclair.
Chat.
Nick Cummins, aka the Honey Badger.
Chat.
Stephen Moore.
No chat.
Bernard Foley.
No chat.
Will Genya.
No chat.
Alex Dornbrandt.
Chat.
And then Adam Jones.
Chat.
Okay.
Not that you can understand Bong, but yeah, he was saying something. I can never understand him half the time, but he had some chat.
James Hall, thank you so much for staying late for us over in Brisbane.
Much,
you've been
mate.
Absolutely
we
wonderful.
Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Boys. Appreciate it. Good to talk.
Cloders. Hey, mate. It's me again. Don't know where you are. Are you on holiday or what? Give me a call back. Wish I was doing the pod, because there's no chat in this hospital. And actually, some of the babies are just crying all the time. Thank God the nanny's here. She's great. And she's wearing these amazing, like, Lululemon leggings. You know what I'm like about Lululemon leggings. Anyway, it's 2:40 to midnight. I've just had about 7 beers. Feeling pretty loose. If it was the weekend, I'd probably be heading to Inferno, so I've got the feeling. But not much happening here in the hospital. Been trying to give some of the nurses some chat, but they just don't really get it. I don't think many of them have been to private school. But anyway, mate, just thought I'd let you know. Give me a call. Come down. Can't reiterate enough, the baby hasn't really done much, just eating really. And they tried to tell me about nappy, but I told them no, my family don't, the men in my family don't do nappies.
Well, that was the ever charming Mr. Archie Curzon, and yet somewhat slightly old fashioned in his ways he may be. And of course, James Horrible, ex-Wallabies captain, thank you so much for coming on, James. You were wonderful. Guys, thanks for listening. In many ways, this was a bonus episode. Archie's going to bring up a baby by himself. He's stressed out, and yet he still found time to create wonderful content. So we hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with a rugby heavyweight. But until then, in the words of Archie Curzon, love and champagne.
Well, I come home, baby, and I've been working all night long. Put my daughter on my knee, and she said, "Daddy, what's wrong?" She whispered in my ear so sweet, "You know what what she said, she said,
ooh, daddy, you're a fool, you're a fool.